Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. In September 2014, voters in Scotland took to the polls to decide whether that nation should break off from the United Kingdom and become an independent country. In the end, the vote failed. But now another group in Europe is hoping to assert their independence. This time, it's the region of Catalonia, looking to secede from Spain. This area on Spain's border with France has many of the attributes of a European nation. With 7.5 million people, it's about as populous as Switzerland. It has its own language and a distinctive history stretching back 1,000 years. It's also one of Spain's wealthiest regions, and its capital, Barcelona, is a major tourist destination. In September, Artur Mas, president of the Catalan regional government, held a parliamentary election he said was a referendum on whether Catalonia should attempt to become independent. Pro-independence parties won a narrow majority of the seats, and 2 months later, the new parliament passed a resolution to begin the process of breaking away from Spain. But that's much, much easier said than done. Spain's constitutional court has ruled the secession effort unconstitutional, and most all of Spain's major political parties have unified in opposition to the move ahead of national elections on December 20th. On this edition of Global Journalist, a look at the future of Spain and Catalonia. We're joined today by a panel of three different guests. First of all, joining us from Lawrence, Kansas, Luis Corteguera. He's a history professor at the University of Kansas, author of the book For the Common Good, Popular Politics in Barcelona, 1580 to 1640. Joining us from Barcelona is Simon Harris, a writer who supports Catalan independence and is author of the book Catalonia is Not Spain, A Historical Perspective. And joining us from London, Daniel Lacalle. He's a Spanish fund manager, chief investment officer at Tresis Gestion and Alpha Strategy, and a critic of the independence effort. Welcome to all of you. Simon Harris, I understand you're British. You've been in Catalonia for something like 25, 30 years. Tell us just a little bit about the people there. How different are Catalans from other people in Spain? When you're on the street, if you ask for directions at a bus stop, if you're speaking to a stranger, can you identify them straight away as being either Catalan or Spanish?
I don't think we need to get too jingoistic about national identities. Actually, most people in Catalonia are bilingual. So when I first came here in 1988, I learned Spanish first. And it took me quite a long time to realize that I was actually in a different country. When you dig a little bit deeper, you will find that people have a different identity and speak a different language and think in a slightly different way. But we shouldn't really exaggerate this, because throughout the Franco period, about 2.5 million migrants from the rest of Spain came to live in Catalonia. So we're very much a mixed bag here, and the independence push is much less about identity rather than self-government, government of proximity, and economics, I think.
Daniel Lacalle, you're from Madrid originally. Do you see things the same way? Are the ethnic distinctions between Catalans and people in the rest of Spain quite minor, really?
Yeah, I mean, there are no ethnic differences. There's been a movement that's been existing for a number of years, which is separatist, but there's no ethnic sort of a cultural difference between Catalans and the rest of the country. Very, very minor cultural differences, which are obviously part of a very varied and rich culture in Spain that ranges from one region to another. But I don't see there's no ethnic difference. There's no 1,000 years of history either. Catalonia was part of the Kingdom of Aragon and has never been an independent nation or an independent kingdom. But in any case, it's a great region with a fantastic culture, a great and vibrant entrepreneurial backbone, but not an ethnic difference, not at all.
Well, Luis Corteguera, you're a historian who studies Spanish history. I understand that this part of Spain has been unified with Castile, the area around Madrid, for hundreds and hundreds of years, dating, I think, to the time of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, who Americans may know as the monarchs who sponsored Christopher Columbus. Can you give us some perspective on this and tell us maybe just a bit about why this debate about Catalonian independence is happening now in 2015 if these regions of Spain have been united for so long?
As has been mentioned, there's been a long tradition of Catalan identity with its institution, its separate language, that goes back to centuries. So certainly Catalans have had their own sense of being their own people. Questions about union and independence are all complicated because these are modern terms. When Catalonia, along with the Crown of Aragon, as people say, became part of the rest of Spain. In fact, it was a marriage, and each of the regions kept their own separate laws and institutions. And it's been a very, very long process of part integration and coexistence. The latest turn is really in favor of independence is really the result of current changes in the last few years, the economic crisis, the rise of the conservative popular party that has really created dissatisfaction with the current government and the current situation. And independence reflects that sense of frustration and that desire to break away and achieve something better.
Well, Simon Harris, you are a supporter of the independence movement. From your vantage point, tell us, what are the strongest arguments for independence here? I mean, you said earlier that sort of the cultural ethnic distinctions are really quite minor. So what are the main arguments?
Before I move on to that, I would like to challenge Enric Lacaille on the existence of the nation. In fact, I recommend my book because there's two or three chapters that cover the nation founding about 1,000 years ago. But I don't think that's pertinent at the moment. Really, what we're talking about now is a lack of recognition of difference and a centralist view of government that has gone on too long in Spain, that has really failed to recognize the different needs of an area, of a region like Catalonia, with such an important capital. We think that governing ourselves means that we can govern our own society and our own economy to our own benefits. And that's not necessarily being doing any harm to anybody else. But we feel that Madrid is incapable of seeing things from our point of view. And there's a number of policies that have hurt us quite badly over the last few years. The main trigger came in 2010 when the new statute of autonomy that was passed by the Catalan Parliament, the Spanish Congress, and by a referendum in Catalonia was thrown out by the Constitutional Court. Had this gone through, giving us slightly more self-government rights, then things wouldn't have reached this problematic
position. So Catalonia's regional parliament passed a law that would have given it some more autonomy, some more control over its own affairs, and the Spanish Constitutional Court threw this out, in other words, and that's triggered some of this sentiment then.
Yes, definitely. The modern movement, and for somebody like me, I've only been pro-independence since 2010. Up until that point, I thought it was interesting to work within Spain. But since 2010...
Let me turn this now to Daniel Lacaille then so that he can give a response to some of those points that you just made here.
Well, the first is, you know, we're not going to rewrite history. It's ridiculous to talk about a nation that has never existed. But in any case, I think that what's important about this is that the Constitutional Court did not rule out the autonomy agreement that was voted by Parliament. There was only one part in which it declared itself a nation. The autonomy and the level of independence and control of its own affairs that Catalonia as a region has within the European Union, within Spain, is unequaled relative to any other federal state, wanted to call the Landes in Germany, wanted to call what Scotland has in the UK. The first thing is, it's not about the level of autonomy. Less than 25% of the revenues of each of the regions in Spain is devoted to things that would not be considered by Catalonia as services that they benefit from. So there is the management of revenues and of expenses. Let's remember that Catalonia as a region has enjoyed not only the financing of the rest of the European Union through the European Central Bank, but Catalonia itself has had over and over and over again requested new funds from the government. That's not a problem. That's absolutely fine. That is part of an ongoing normal process within the European Union. But
so in other words, Catalonia, you're arguing then, already controls quite a lot of the tax revenues, a lot of the government financing that is spent in that area then, that the Spanish state controls a relatively small figure.
I'm actually quoting here the report of the group of transition to independence that was promoted by the Generalitat, the government of Catalonia. I'm quoting, that 79% of revenues are already controlled by the Generalitat.
Well, this is a good point, and I want to come back to that in just a minute. We have to take a brief break here to remind our listeners they're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the issue of Catalan independence from Spain. With national elections coming up December 20th, will the eastern region move closer to breaking away? Our guests this week from Lawrence, Kansas, Luis Corteguera, a history professor at the University of Kansas, author of For the Common Good, Popular Politics in Barcelona, 1580 to 1640. From Barcelona, Simon Harris, a writer who supports Catalan independence and is author of the book Catalonia is Not Spain, A Historical Perspective. And from London, Daniel Lacalle, a fund manager and chief investment officer at Tresis Gestion and Alpha Strategy, and a critic of the independence effort. A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read in-depth articles on international affairs and free press issues and download past episodes from our archive. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at GlobalJourn. Luis Corteguera, if you could just back our listeners up a little bit and give us just some of a few of the key recent events. We heard Simon Harris talking earlier about this constitutional court decision in Spain in 2010 preventing Catalonia from having more autonomy that seems to have triggered sort of a backlash among many Catalans. I understand last year there was something of like a wildcat referendum where Catalonia held a plebiscite, a vote that wasn't recognized by the Spanish government to gauge sentiment for independence. Can you tell us a little bit about the political events from there until this fall?
The election was actually an election for the local parliament, Catalan parliament, and the pro-independence parties argued that it would be
I thought last fall there was a plebiscite where something like 2 million people voted on this question.
It was a parliamentary vote that was interpreted as a plebiscite, as the parties in favor of independence insisted on that reading, which others challenged. And clearly, the pro-independence parties, the two major a coalition and another party, they won an absolute majority in the Catalan parliament, which has led to the current negotiations right now.
And tell us just for a moment about this question of European Union membership. If Catalonia does split off from Spain here, what would happen? Would it remain in the European Union? What passports would people have?
It's highly debated. Obviously, Catalans want to stay in the European Union, and many insist that that will be the case, that Europe would never take Catalonia out of the European Union. This is all enmeshed in politics, and there are arguments back and forth, some insisting that Catalonia would have to go back to the line with other nations applying for membership. There is certainly no clear answer at this point. I think everyone is hoping they don't have to make that decision. Fight might be over whether Madrid will allow for some kind of referendum to finally get a decision from Catalans, that is an actual plebiscite referendum. Meanwhile, we're waiting for the elections that will come up on December the 20th. And then pro-independence parties are insisted that they will not wait and they will go ahead with the process of independence. So lots is really complicating the situation and everything's really up in the air.
Well, let me turn this to Simon Harris then. We have touched on a number of different points here. But Daniel Lacaille was talking about this question of resources and government spending, which seems to be sort of one of the key elements. Catalonia is one of the richest regions of Spain. Correct me if I'm wrong here. It generates about 19% of Spain's GDP. It has only about 16% of the population, and yet it only gets about 12% of Spain's national budget. So the question here is it that Catalonians perceive that the rest of Spain is sort of milking them of their resources?
Very much so, and I want to take Daniel Lacaille up on a point, an earlier point about the statute that was thrown out. Actually, 14 articles were declared unconstitutional, and amongst them there were many, but the financial status of Catalonia was very important. At the time, per capita, the Catalans are the third highest contributors per capita to Spanish wealth. But when we get investment back, we drop down to the 10th highest. And it's generally calculated, depending on who's doing the calculation, but it's generally calculated that 8% of our GDP, which is about 16 billion euros, that's 16,000 million euros a year, go out of Catalonia that don't come back, which actually leaves us below average in terms of wealth in Spain. So although we should be richer, we end up being poorer as a result of Spain. Nobody here would argue about solidarity and helping out the poorer regions, but we do gripe rather about ending up poorer as a result of a rather jingoistic and let's say racist set of government policies.
Well, Daniel Lacaille, there's something you may want to respond to there, but I would ask you, just for our audience in the United States, for elsewhere in Europe, what are the best arguments that the Spanish government can make to Catalonia as to why you shouldn't break away? What, you know, we have heard that it is a wealthier region. There are some linguistic differences. Why should they stay a part of Spain?
It's very simple. The reason why it's better to stay within Spain is, as you very well said, Catalonia is about 19% of the GDP of the country, yet 56% of what would be the independent country's exports are to the west of Spain. So there's a mutual benefit, obviously, of being together. The first one is that if you go into independence and you have to start from bilateral treaties, etc.
But if you're in the European Union together, correct me if I'm wrong, that trade could still flow.
Yeah, I quote, I don't have to, we don't, we, I quote the Treaty of the European Union, and I quote Chancellor Merkel, Prime Minister David Cameron, Francois Hollande, and Commissioner Almunia. Everybody has told the regional government that if they secede, they would not be part of the European Union. They could use the euro if they wanted. You can use the euro in any country if you want to use it, but you would not be part of the benefits of being in the European Union. You would have to ask for to come into the European Union as an independent country. That is, it's in the treaty. That's not debatable, and that's not just not debatable. It's been said by every leader in the European Union. However, let's go back to that fantastic point of the perennial deficit that Simon just mentioned, 16 billion every year. There's a trick to that. The independentist movement uses a number that is not a cash number. It is so obvious that the rating agencies, none of the rating agencies in the world give a benefit to Catalonia for being independent. In fact, all of them argue that if they go independent, they would lose even worse.
So in other words, you're saying that the rating agencies here are betting that Catalonia wouldn't be able to pay its debts as well independently as it can as part of Spain, and they would charge a premium.
Exactly.
Catalonia would have to pay higher interest.
It is already junk bond. It is already junk bond as a regional bond. However, if it was to secede, and it's in the report of Standard & Poor's, of Moody's, and of Fitch, They give no credence and no benefit to that so-called difference of budget. And you know why? Because that number that Simon quoted is including a deficit, is including what the government, what the whole of the Spanish country has been running as a massive deficit in the last 8 years, which has been running between 10% of GDP to 5.5% this year. So it's not talking about revenues, it's talking about revenues plus debt. And that is the mistake. That's why it comes so aggressively huge. It is so huge and so ridiculous that within, and I quote again the report of the Catalonian transition government body, whatever it is, they say that the cost of independence would be $35 billion and that they would have to issue junk bond status, bonds to pay for the salaries. That is in the report that I'm reading.
Well, let me turn this to Luis Corteguera then, because you raised some important points about the cost of all this. But you also spoke about the issue of European Union membership, Luis Corteguera. And you heard Daniel Lacalle saying that German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Prime Minister David Cameron have said that they have expressed preference anyways that Catalonia would remain part of Spain, and haven't said that it would be sort of a guaranteed thing that it would be in the European Union, in the euro, if they do break away. But how does that work if the people that live there already have European Union passports? It seems like the issue is more complicated than that.
Yes, it's very complicated, and there are many things that remain unresolved, and this is a part of everyday political discussion. I do want to add one more thing, because the economic arguments are not the only reason. I would say they're not really the reason that really moves the heart. The part of the reason is something Daniel Lacalle mentioned, which is this lack of recognition of Catalans as a nation. To me, it's all semantics. What is a nation? And that clearly has become a point of discussion. But this insistence that Catalans want to be heard and recognized as a nation, and the challenge that they are not a nation, which again, to me, is largely semantics, it hurts, because it is a way of denying Catalans their own claims to a sense that they have a distinctive character, a distinctive identity. It is complicated, and some people might find it difficult. How could you be Catalan and Spanish, but how can you be Spanish and European? So these are very much, again, matters of the heart, as I would say, and they very much drive a lot of this intensity behind current discussions.
Simon Harris, you're originally from England. Scotland, of course, had a referendum in 2014 on seceding from the UK. What are some of the lessons that the Catalan independence movement has taken away from the Scottish experience? And of course, that Scottish vote failed by about 10%.
Well, I think the two cases are very different, so it's quite difficult to take lessons. But picking up on the last point about identity, and it's interesting that Daniel Lacalle on various points has really talked down the Catalonia's right to existence and some of Catalonia's claims. Nobody would ever doubt that Scotland is a nation. And one of the problems we have here in Spain is that people continually doubt Catalonia's right to being a nation, Catalonia's right to 1,000 years nationhood, and the removal of the word nation from the statute. And so the other participant was quite correct in pointing out this emotional aspect. What can we draw from the Scottish case? Well, as I say, the two situations are quite difficult, because Scotland was allowed a referendum. And in the end, the Scots voted against becoming independent. I think one of Spain's massive mistakes, actually, has not been allowing Catalonia a referendum. Had we been able to have a referendum, then the Spanish nationalists or the unionists would have been able to campaign in favour of reasons for staying together.
Well, let me turn that to Daniel Lacalle then, just to pick up on that theme. The United Kingdom did allow Scotland to have a referendum on independence back in 1995. There was a referendum in Canada on Quebec gaining independence. So, you know, you've made some arguments about sort of the economic consequences of independence, but people may make their decisions about this based on other reasons. So why not allow Catalonia to have a vote on this?
First, because the sovereignty doesn't rely on the regions. The sovereignty relies on the entire nation. You want a referendum? A referendum will have to happen throughout the entire Spain. The sovereignty is in the Constitution. The Constitution was voted by the vast majority, by the way, in Catalonia in 1978, and the sovereignty relies on the rest of the entire Spain. You don't have the right to make a declaration of independence about a part that in which you don't have the entire sovereignty. That is the reason. The second reason, obviously, is the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom doesn't have a constitution like Spain has. The United Kingdom doesn't have is the union of different kingdoms, nations that existed. Mr. Simon might want to talk whatever he wants, but history is history. This has never been an independent nation. The closest it got to being independent was being part of the Kingdom of Aragon.
But Daniel, this is sort of a legalistic argument, but clearly there's political sentiment that feels otherwise, and so at some point, don't you have to accommodate that political sentiment?
The same way that you live in the United States, that some people in Louisiana decided a couple of years ago that they wanted to secede. Okay, that makes absolutely no sense in any case. In any other case, we're talking about the sentiment of 49% of the voting people, maybe. That's the best part. But what about the rest? What about the rest of the Catalan people that have not risen flags, that are undertaking their day-to-day lives? That we're talking about dividing a region just because some part feels that way. I don't think that is the way ahead. I think that's the way ahead.
Well, let me turn that point then to Luis Corteguera. Luis, we do have just about 20 seconds left. Where do you see this issue being 2 years from now, 3 years from now?
It's impossible to say because politics are really out of flux. Right now, everyone's waiting for the results of the Spanish elections, and there will be great negotiation and much political debate. So we're all waiting to see. Very exciting in some ways, and I trust they have Spain has a long history of achieving great things, and I think they will resolve this problem.
That's going to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Luis Corteguera, Simon Harris, and Daniel Lacalle for coming on the program. Global Journalist executive producer is Josh Kranzberg. Our associate producers this week are Javila Ruskaskate, Erjun Peng, Elenia Kaya, and Zhou Hang. Our studio director is Travis McMillan from RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.